First off, it's sport, and this week's sportscaster is a woman from the top end of Australia's Northern Territory, Shannon Byrne. Kia ora, Shannon. Welcome back to Nights.
Oh, hi, Brian. Yes, thank you for having me. Yeah, I guess you not catch me, but you get me at a new time. Daylight savings obviously finished for the east coast of Australia. We don't have to touch our clocks, but yes, it's 6:45 here. Sun has set. Beautiful breeze. Hopefully will kick in a bit later, but we've had a warm day. It's 35 degrees here, which feels a bit hotter.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we've got some warm weather this week in the Territory.
35, it's still pretty sticky. That's not dry season weather yet, is it?
That is not dry season weather at all. There's still rain clouds around, so could be having a late wet, which we're not complaining about. Everything looks lovely and green. Mozzies probably haven't been too bad. You just stay out. Stay outdoors probably anywhere after 5 o'clock with midges and mosquitoes, but hopefully they'll be all gone in a month.
Doesn't it depend on where you live? Because where I lived in Darwin, Perap, or Ludmilla, we weren't many mozzies. That was one of the great pleasant surprises. I thought I would be eaten alive when I was outdoors most of the time, but really I didn't have to worry about mozzies in the city that much.
Yeah, I'm next door in the Stuart Park suburb, but we get them around here. We're probably a bit closer to water, heading over towards Dinah Beach and the wharf. So I think it just depends. There are certain areas or suburbs where they're really bad. That's because some suburbs have had, it's a fill-in of swamp. You know, we know that some of the areas where the top of Australia, we can't go out, so they've had to try and fill in some areas. And, a couple of suburbs are actually on mangroves, and apparently they just get absolutely, it's called baby, but they call it bagon. And you need some of that to get rid of the mosquitoes and midges. So, yeah, you're right. It does depend. Some suburbs are worse than others, but,
I missed that, Shannon. Bagon. What did you say
bagon.
Then?
Bagon.
What's that?
Yeah, Bayview. Bagon's our, repellent spray. It's just a brand of spray.
And it was what? You just put it on your body to put them off?
Yep. We have repellent. Everybody owns mosquito repellent. coils. And I was at my sister's the other night, and they got out this big fancy thing that they take camping. And it's about 30 centimetres long, and it has two buttons, and you have a little gas thing in it, and then you put this strip in it, and you fire it up, and it sits underneath the table, and that's heavy, very heavy duty for camping. You get it at the camping store.
And what is it? Does it produce some kind of aroma that puts the mozzies off?
Yep.
Hope it doesn't stink too much. I assume it's a reasonably pleasant smell to the human nose.
No, it doesn't smell at all, but yes, it's very good, but you've got to get it going. And like anything, you get it going early if you're going to be sitting outside, and a fan helps blows it all.
Right.
You get mosquitoes in New Zealand.
We get mosquitoes. There are mosquitoes in some parts of New Zealand, especially the west coast of the South Island. They get more. But actually, the worst biting pest in New Zealand is a sandfly. And you get sandflies right down the western side of the South Island, in particular in Fiordland. Sandflies. It stops. Some of the locals will say, for example, Okurito Beach, which is a beautiful beach and lagoon. On the western side of the South Island, and some of the locals will say, the sandflies stop it from being overrun with tourists because you can't lie out in the sun for too long because you get eaten alive.
There's always a positive.
Exactly.
They fly and bite and suck too, so they're very similar to mosquitoes. I've just Googled it while I'm sitting here.
Yeah.
Very similar looking.
There's the advantage of having a computer in front of you when you're doing an interview. Now, Formula One, this is a sport that's took place way to your south, about as far away as it can get from Darwin in Australia and still be on Australia, Melbourne. And was there excitement? Because there's a fair proportion of Darwinites who like their motor racing out there.
Yeah, we have a round of the supercars, certainly do. And I was really excited. you know, this is something motorsport fans and a lot of sporting fans, it's been 3 years since the likes of Daniel Ricciardo has been home to race. So, you know, there was a lot expected. And it was 2 years ago when COVID hit, there were actually people in the line waiting to get into the track at Melbourne Park. And they were making the decision to shut down the Formula One. So that is how big the moment was the last time, you know, they were close to racing. And, 2 years ago they shut it down and then people were turned away and no one could kind of understand why. But, news was breaking that there was a big outbreak. And then last year they just didn't host it at all because of quarantine issues about getting people over what was going to be the quarantine issue. So they just called it off. And this year, they had the biggest record number of fans to a sporting event. I mean, incidentally, it is over 3 or 4 days. They get practices and they get qualifying, and then yesterday they were racing. But they had over 400,000 people attend the event over the last couple of days. They've just been absolutely blown away by the amount of people that rocked up to watch it. I sat and watched it and the supercars before it and the supercars all over the weekend. So, yeah, I was one of the few that I know that sat probably for 2 days. It does help that I have a little baby and it was too hot to be outside. there was a real buzz around the Australian Grand Prix this year. And it was an interesting race, to tell you the truth, Brian. The Ferrari driver, obviously Charles Leclerc, won. He converted his pole position into a dominant win. So it wasn't really a battle for top spot. He wasn't really challenged at all. But watching world champion Max Verstappen failing to finish for the second time this year, retiring with engine failure, his car just, he hit a wall and then it just stopped. So it was just dramatic to watch that. And he was in second and it was just baffling. Daniel Ricciardo, our Aussie, he came sixth. But he did admit in conversations at the end of it that his teammate Norris, who was in front of him, was starting towards the end to have car trouble, and he was ordered by his team not to overtake him. It's so funny how things can happen and what the team can actually tell drivers to do. So Ricciardo was very, I think, coy in saying, "Yeah, I'm pretty happy with my result," knowing that he could have gone one better. His car would have got him one better. But his teammate was in front of him and he was ordered not to overtake him in the last bit. So that was quite funny. But his first points for 2022 as well. He was absolutely mobbed everywhere he went. And the scenes, he just is a smiling, happy Formula One. And, I think getting inside the top 10 was a huge result for him.
Are you one of those people who's become addicted to the Netflix series Drive to Survive on Formula One?
Yes, I've started it, yes. It's just so fascinating. I just love Netflix, though, in terms of what they offer with some of these documentaries being able to be made. Watching that, but also, I don't know if anyone else, even just watching the Australian Grand Prix, the access and the camera work and even the graphics they use for Formula One, there is so much money in that sport. It just is mind-boggling to think how much money is in that sport. And you can tell, no offence, when it goes from the camera work or the people that are operating it, from, say, like the supercars, the support cars, even just the graphics they use in Formula One are just next level. And I just sit there going, wow, they have got a lot of money and the top people doing everything in that sport.
It's a fossil-fueled frenzy, isn't it, Shannon? You got to admit.
Oh, it certainly is. And they changed tyres as well. So there was a lot of talk. I find it very fascinating. Same as the supercars, in that you've all got to kind of have the same equipment. It's how your car just runs on the day and how you drive the car as to how well, you've got the same exact tyres, but someone else can handle it better, or someone's blow up because, they might have hit the edge too much, or the car is, they were doing too many laps too fast. And, it's just, there's so many things towards it. And when you see the celebrations, you understand why 20 people are around celebrating. There's so many people that go on, just not the driver.
Shannon, were you watching the football, the women's football, between your Matildas and the football Ferns?
No, I was watching the results because I had the Aussie rules on.
Who's Aussie rules? What, the competition down south, the big Aussie competition?
Yeah, but not because it was the Aussies. I think Something to do with the streaming. One of my streaming's not on the TV, so sometimes it takes too long to get it up.
Because, you know, that would have been the ultimate game for an Aussie football fan if you want to have a bit of delayed gratification. Because for 90 minutes, you were behind.
Yeah.
Okay, not 90 minutes, yeah. Because New Zealand, I think, scored their goal in about 23 minutes in against the run of play.
Yep.
1-0 to New Zealand, and then proceeded to hang on against the run of play. Against the run of play. We were being dominated, but you couldn't score. And at 90 minutes in, I thought, maybe? That was when I started thinking, maybe. But then I saw 5 minutes of injury time. And that's when I thought, nah. I thought, we're not going to do it. This is perhaps the difference between an Australian and a New Zealand sports fan, where it's just this is inherent pessimism in the New Zealander that's trying, nah. We always knew we were going to win.
But what happens, yes. Brian, that's us Aussies when we're not playing you. Whenever we get extra time against Japan or anyone like that, I just think, oh no, that's too long. We can't hold them off. It's always the same.
Because from your point of view, that was a bit of a disappointing result to have all that possession and only squeak home 2-1 in the last minute seconds of the game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And when you see we had everybody available and everybody was on the pitch, I did watch the highlights this morning on ABC TV, and you're right. I just, like, this is normally what happens to us. We're normally 1-0 or we're 1-0 up and we, you know, get a late equaliser, and then in extra time something just happens and we switch off. But, yeah, it has been a long time where we've trailed, and I don't think we have lost you guys since the 1990s.
You haven't lost since 1994 to New Zealand in women's football.
Yeah. We were well on track. You were right. They looked like, you thought, how much extra time? And then, the two that popped up, Emily Van Eggman and Sam Kerr, you know, and she's not always guaranteeing to score at the moment, Sam Kerr, but, I think the celebrations were good, but they would also be in the background going, phew, we got away with that one.
Yeah, because you're going to be co-hosting the Women's World Cup with New Zealand later this year or early next year. I forget exactly when.
Not this year. We've got the Basketball World Cup this year.
Have you?
Yes, it's next year. Yeah, we do. We've got so many World Cups. Sydney has the 2022 Women's Basketball World Cup coming up in September, so that's exciting. And next year, we're co-hosting, as you said, the Women's World Cup in football. So, yeah, this is a really good opportunity, though. That was played up in Townsville. I think just over 10,000 fans watched that.
Mm.
And, it was one of two friendly. So I think it's a very good hit out for where both teams are, where they want to be to show, you know, the next couple of months. They've probably got, both would say, selection headaches. The upside is both of us are at home, really.
Mm.
So we've got a lot more of the youngsters we can look at, as, you know, the W League just finished here. It's good to see that 10,000 people in Townsville, though, went out and supported.
I know, because that was something that I thought, this is a good crowd. And I was a little bit surprised when they said Townsville, because that's League Central, isn't it? Rugby League Central.
Yep. Absolutely, exactly. That's where it was played. So their new stadium. And, no, I thought that was a very, very good turnout. But I just think it shows not only the rise of women's football, but this is the momentum shift of us hosting the World Cup. Everybody is getting on board and everyone is excited about what, you know, potentially we could do at home.
How much of a big deal did you make of your women's cricket team? Because if there's one team that really, in the last few years, really, where there's been hardly a doubt, it's been your women's one-day cricket team. Only once in the World Cricket Cup we've just been hosting here did they look vulnerable near the end. They were challenged, as I think one of their best players, Elise Perry, said after the final. Occasionally they were challenged, but they always got themselves out of trouble. Only once did England look in the first game they played like maybe they might squeak home with a victory, get the runs needed. Rest of the time, total domination from the Australians. How were they rated back home?
Yeah, phenomenal. And I guess the buzz was around when you saw like the likes of what Alyssa Healy did with the bat. So everyone was talking about her performance in the big games in the finals series, and she was just absolutely phenomenal to watch. I think I spoke to you in the lead-up saying, there's a lot of a cloud over Elise Perry and her future. you know, they have that luxury of, you know, she was injured for a game or two, injured enough not to bowl, then she was a batter, then she was dropped down the order, and in lots of games they didn't need her. I just think there's something special about cricket in Australia in that we have such depth as well as the youngsters being able to do a lot of stuff. But, you know, Alyssa Healy doing what she does, Meg Lanning, you know, Beth Mooney, it's absolutely phenomenal what our veteran cricketers are able to produce. And, yeah, I think, you know, watching England play New Zealand and we had the West Indies, I think we would have had to play bad to actually not win the World Cup going in the form that we did throughout that series. I was really impressed. How was it received there? I thought there was a good crowd. I watched the final. You know, people were kind of late coming in, so it was kind of starting. It didn't look like a good crowd. But then later on, the picture showed that there was people all around. I thought, you know, it was a good crowd. How was it received?
Yeah, I think we had the red traffic light for Omicron over here because our wave is a little bit later than yours. And we were just coming out of that. And so crowds could go back to the cricket towards the end of the competition, and they did. And I think it was, I thought it was a good crowd given New Zealand wasn't involved. And
I think the
pitches and the actual stand of the games has been good. It's a little bit disappointing from a neutral point of view that Australia doesn't have anyone closer to them, but that's not their fault of the Australian team.
Yeah, but you still, the interesting fact still, then, you know, England were the defending champions, so there was a lot of pressure on Australia to live up to how well they had been playing and that, you know, big runs they've had as World Cup, as, you know, Australian one-day players. So, you know, there is a lot of pressure on the team to perform as well, as there are other teams. You know, I think South Africa too, you could hear their captain when they bowed out of the competition. But, yeah, no, it was well received here. A lot of people watched it.
Shannon, just briefly, we've only got about a minute left, but did you watch Shane Warne's televised memorial service?
No, I actually didn't. My mum was at home babysitting watching it, and I was out for my first night out without our daughter, and we lasted an hour and a half, and we went out for a quiet drink and then rushed home. So, I heard it was really great, and my mum was very tearful through it, and it was very well done. It will be up there, obviously, with Princess Diana's funeral and, you know, the billions of people that tuned in to watch the absolute icon. But, yeah, it was a night I couldn't miss an opportunity to have my daughter babysat with her grandma. So, yeah.
Well, you know,
TV. I'll probably sit down and watch it, so...
Shannon, I'm glad
you...
It's
quite hard to believe that that's happened.
I'm glad you as a woman decided to prioritise you and your night out with your friends ahead of watching the memorial service for an Aussie icon, great sporting bloke, but still a bit of a larrikin.
You know what? If you'd asked me that 2 or 3 years ago, especially at the prime of my career as a journalist, I would have said, absolutely, I watched it. Probably watched it 3 times. But yes, no, I didn't. Sorry. Did you watch it?
I saw a few highlights.
So did I. I definitely saw the highlights, and you know the stand is now there, and all the Aussie rule games are played. So that's a nice touch. And his beloved St Kilda played a huge part in the day.
Shannon, thanks so much for joining us again. All the best for the coming drier months.
Yes, thank you very much. See you guys. Have a lovely night.
That's Shannon Byrne, our sportscaster, on the other side of the Tasman, a little bit up the top of Australia.